The pandemic has completely changed how we work. And even after the pandemic ends, hopefully next year with all the vaccines coming in, I don't think we're going to go back to work the way it was before. I think the world is going to be much more distributed from a workforce perspective.
Rajiv Ramaswamy is the new president and CEO of Nutanix. This is the Tech Barometer podcast. Rajiv comes from VMware, where he was the chief operating officer. But before that, his career took him to some of the stalwarts of enterprise computing, like IBM, Tel Labs, which was acquired by Nortel, where he served as a VP. He was also a VP at Cisco and EVP at Broadcom, all along the way, having a lasting impact as a leader at those companies. This is a podcast welcoming Rajiv to Nutanix by the company's founder and recently retired CEO, Dheeraj Pandey. In this podcast, Dheeraj and Rajiv chat about where things are in the industry and the vision for the future. This was recorded in late December of 2020.
Welcome, everyone, and welcome to this podcast. Thank you for listening. With me, I have Rajiv Ramaswamy, the new CEO of Nutanix. I was just thinking about the last 11 plus years of my own journey here at the company, starting from just the three of us to now we have more than 6,000 employees. And really having built a respectable, reputable operating systems brand where people now think about VMware, Red Hat, and Nutanix in the same vein when you think about running infrastructure software, both on-prem and off-prem. There's been tons of pivots and micro-pivots, last 3 years of business model change, really making it future-proof. I feel really good about it. And more than that, I'm just so happy to actually have a great leader like Rajiv come and take the torch from me and bear the torch of invisible infrastructure. It's a pleasure to really welcome Rajiv to this company. Thank you, Rajiv, and welcome to this podcast.
Thank you, Dheeraj. It's indeed a delight to be here. I've only held Nutanix with the greatest of admiration from the outside. Having listened to you actually pitch the initial story back 10 years ago, I think, now almost, and you've taken this company and brought it to just this wonderful point here. It's not easy to do what you've done, Dheeraj, and you deserve a lot of kudos for building this company, building Nutanix, taking it to $1 billion, building a core product portfolio that just completely delights customers and does what they needed to do. It's indeed an honor. I'm humbled to be taking over from you. I think we've got a great journey ahead of us.
Thank you. And it's, of course, it's the people. I was mostly a curator and an orchestrator. So we'll dive right in, talk about the future of cloud. You know, as both of us have spoken in the past, cloud is all about commerce and doing more for the customer with ops and automation and service. How does one do so being a software company in this world of public cloud and the edge cloud, Rajiv?
Yes, look, I mean, most companies who are in this business of selling software have to now figure out their path forward in the cloud. And for us at Nutanix, clearly what we have enabled customers to do is to enable them to go build clouds inside their data centers. And also, of course, now extending that into the edge. And now the next phase in our journey is really helping them run their applications in the public cloud. Now, cloud, to your earlier point there, Dheeraj, cloud is really a place to run workloads. And workloads can be run, workloads or applications can be run anywhere. They can be run in the public cloud, in somebody else's data center. It can be run in your own customer data center. It can be run in your own edge locations. So a company like Nutanix has the opportunity to make that experience completely seamless for our customers and give them the ability to run a consistent stack wherever they are running their workloads. That's the opportunity for companies like us to really help customers figure out and run their workloads wherever they choose to need to and wherever they need to run their workloads.
All about choice and ubiquity. And that's probably the big test for us in the coming 3 to 5 years. You know, we made our software so portable in the last 5 years, even though we started from the appliance roots. I wanted to get into the other topic of platforms. You know, Microsoft was about Windows and the apps. Apple was about iOS and the apps. VMware was about ESX and vCenter and EUC and then some, you know. How do you see that duality for success of any platform company, you know, the operating system and the apps?
So what is the definition of a platform? A platform means you're providing a set of fundamental foundational capabilities to your customers where they can run stuff on top of the platform, and you can also have an ecosystem of other providers who can build off of your platform and deliver additional value-added services to the customer. So for us, we're delivering a foundational platform, AOS. Our customers are running workloads or apps on that platform. And those workloads and apps can be very specific things. For example, we clearly got our early start from virtual desktops and hosting desktops. That's a workload that we've been very successful at historically. And now, as we look at some of the newer areas that we're looking at, for example, now we have Era, which is providing database management as a service. And that can help land database workloads on our platform, which is another workload. So on the first point, then, it's about figuring out, you know, as a platform, what workloads can we attract to our platform? And as we look at both traditional and new workloads, you know, there's cloud native applications, there's AI and ML type applications. All of those are applications that we'd love to run on a platform. When you look at the ecosystem of services that can be delivered, a platform needs to have extensibility, it needs to have APIs. And we need to be able to support a range of third-party providers who can build off and enhance. For example, we've got a fairly new product here called Mind, right, which does works with backup. And backup is a logical thing, right? You need to be able to back up your data. And working with third-party providers to help enable backup on top of our platform is a good thing for us to do. Now, with either of these, both the ecosystem as well as the workloads itself, we have to also navigate this journey between providing an open platform and where third-party folks can run their apps and also build services, to also providing a select set of services ourselves and a select set of app enablement ourselves. For example, from a virtual desktop perspective, we deliver desktop as a service with Frame. But at the same time, we'd love to work with other virtual desktops like Citrix, for example, running on our platform. If you look at ecosystem, it's again the same kind of thing. There's a lot of areas where we can work with third-party providers, security, for example, compliance, potentially, backup, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that's in a true definition of a platform.
Yeah, it's such a fine balance, you know, being able to compete and cooperate at the same time and being an app provider on top of your platform so you can test your platform, you know, meaningfully. So I want to move on to business models, Rajiv, you know, going from hardware to software to subscription to consumption. It looks like it's all about continuous bite-sized delivery and service of the customer. Your career has mimicked how this industry has transformed. Of course, we look back, there were those who refused to really transform their business models. You know, you look at Sun Microsystems like SGI and digital, and even like EMC that continues to hug proprietary hardware. Where do you think all this ends in this duality between off-prem and on-prem? Because, you know, silicon definitely is not going anywhere. You know, software still needs silicon to run on.
Again, I think there's two things we have to look at here. One is, where are your apps running? And those apps can run anywhere, on-prem, in the public cloud, in Edge. And how are they being consumed? How is the infrastructure that runs those apps being delivered and consumed by the customer? And that is the notion of, you know, you can buy a perpetual license, you can buy an appliance model, you can buy software that's delivered to you on a subscription way. And finally, you can also get software that's delivered to you as a service. Now, at the end of the day, we want to do what makes sense for the customer to consume. And that means increasingly our customers want flexibility in terms of how they consume our software, which is why we have moved from, of course, you know, now we're moving from this perpetual to a subscription model, because that gives a lot more flexibility for customers. And then over time, in fact, as we look at specific areas, we can deliver more and more even as a service, because that makes it even easier for our customers to consume software. Now, that's a journey that we all need to embrace, because ultimately it's what our customers want. And the ones that embrace it can be successful and move on to the next innings and continue to be successful. And the ones that don't will have trouble with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of subscription, you know, obviously Adobe, and I've been seeing it very closely sitting in the front row seat as a board member, but looking at Microsoft and Splunk and so many others that transformed their core business. And yet there were others like Oracle and SAP that continued to look at this as a cloud plus perpetual business. We went all in, like the former group. And my question to you is, how do you think this becomes a competitive advantage for an infrastructure company like us, including things like efficiencies in sales and marketing, like the way we've talked about ACV and sales compensation tied to ACV?
Yes. In fact, this sort of a transition actually impacts every aspect of the company in terms of how you build your products and solutions, how you take them to the market, how you actually build all your back office systems to fulfill that. And that's obviously the journey here that we are going through now. Now, as we come to the tail end of this, what this really means is from our customers' perspective, hey, you know, they would like us even more because we are giving them something that in a way that they want to consume. And we're making it easy for them to consume. We are successful only when they actually consume. So consumption becomes very, very critical for us. Customer success becomes very, very critical for us. And because that's what leads to expansion and leads to renewals over time. And so our success inevitably gets tied to customers being successful. And that's the beauty of this overall cloud model as we get there and the subscription model as we get there.
Mm-hmm. So well said. And obviously it's a journey, and you know, journeys like ours are like an infinite game, as Simon Sinek would call it. And he talks about these five pillars of an infinite mindset, an infinite game, you know, a just cause, trusting teams, a worthy rival, a flexible playbook, and the courage to lead. Where in your long career did you have the best experience of being amongst leaders who trusted each other the most?
I mean, that's a hard question for me, Dheeraj, only because I've had so many of those experiences. I've been so lucky to have worked with phenomenal teams almost at every company that I've worked at. And frankly, I think it's the people at every one of these companies that really make you successful. It's I have a very strong belief that really it's the people around you that work with you, you know, as they become successful, so do you. I think from that perspective, really, I've been so lucky to work with so many great teams at all the companies that I work for. And that's really what's enabled me to get to here.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me, I asked you a tough question and you gave me a pretty politically correct answer, but I like that, Rajiv, you know, in that spirit of the infinite mindset, you know, and this one is going to be, and you know, a really candid question. We need to remember that almost half of our deployments are on VMware ESXi hypervisor, even though the other half is AHV. And that was nothing 5 years ago to where we have come to. Almost half of our deployments are AHV. How do you think of our own innovation engine in continuing to do it right by the customer? Because we need to support ESXi authentically and Red Hat OpenShift and Cisco ACI like ecosystems as we build our own.
Absolutely. Look, Dheeraj, I mean, I think one of the things that we cannot force customers into is any kind of lock-in. And so we have to provide customers the flexibility and choice. So as we innovate, our innovation has to be tied to creating business value for customers. Now, at the same time, we have to innovate within a context of what the customers can actually consume and make use of. So obviously, there's a huge ecosystem out there with vSphere, and we need to work very well with vSphere so that customers can then consume hyperconverged infrastructure running on vSphere platforms, which, as you said, half our customers do today, and we need to continue making that happen. If you look at containers and Kubernetes, again, that's a source of modern workloads for our platform. Of course, we need to work with Red Hat as one of the leading providers there for container deployment in the enterprise. And for us, that becomes a very important workload to run on top of our platforms. Similarly, with all the other ecosystem providers, whether it be security, whether it be networking. Fundamentally, we have to work well with this ecosystem that's out there already. And we have to figure out how to fit into the ecosystem while continuing to deliver unique value through the innovations we bring.
Speaking of which, you know, there's obviously a worthy rival in this ecosystem as we become our own worthy rival. You know, maybe there's a worthy rival within our own sort of psyches as well as leaders. Talk about the paradox of, you know, vision versus ops or execution in your mind. And how do you compete with yourself when it comes to trade-offs? You know, I look at all these CEO transitions in the last 20 years, and sometimes they were overcorrected on either too much vision or too much ops. While we all know that in nature, the pendulum must rest in the middle for the right balance. How have you dealt with all of this in your career?
For me, it's always been about a balance. You can't have too much of one thing and ignore the other in this picture. In fact, I remember many years ago, John Chambers at Cisco sort of talking about vision, strategy, and execution as the three pillars. Vision is, of course, where you want to be, right? What's your aspirational goal? Strategy is how are you going to get there and in a differentiated way that you can sustain? And execution is how do you make measurable progress against those? And frankly, you need all three of those to really build something successful. Missing any of those elements actually will make you less successful. Now, I think, Dheeraj, to your credit, I mean, I think, you know, the first innings of this company going from 0 to 1 billion has been built on the solid foundation of building this, you know, driving HCI, innovating and pioneering HCI in the market. Just coming in here, it's been just phenomenal to see how much innovation the team has driven, even in all these adjacent new products that have come out over the last few, just year or two. And so there is absolutely no shortage of innovation and vision in this company. And I think we need to keep at it. And now we have to, of course, complement that by executing against this. We have a number of things we are executing against. We are executing in terms of how are we scaling our business, going from 1 billion to 2 billion? How are we driving and changing this to a subscription model? Getting our new products into the market and scaling those up. So we have to complement that great vision and strategy that already exists with solid execution here to move the ball forward. And I'm looking forward to doing that, Dheeraj.
It reminds me of the book Atomic Habits and this idea of compounding every day, 1% better every day. I'm looking forward to your leadership on that, Rajiv. I want to talk about mindfulness. One last thing on, you know, how obviously we're in one of the worst pandemics in the last 100 years of, you know, modern history. COVID-19 has taught us a lot on what really matters. How do you think of work and life, you know, melding into one, you know, weekdays becoming weekends, you know, days becoming nights, remote work taking such center stage as people think of? I mean, there's all these companies talking about headquarters in California versus outside and all this stuff. And how we as a company are placed to leverage a truly global workforce?
Yes, in fact, the pandemic has completely changed how we work. And even after the pandemic ends, hopefully next year with all the vaccines coming in, I don't think we're going to go back to work the way it was before. I think the world is going to be much more distributed from a workforce perspective. We've been now in this pandemic world for the last 10 months now, almost. And work-life balance, yes, I don't think of it as work-life balance. I think of it as work-life integration. Almost all of us today working from home are blending our personal lives and our family responsibilities with getting our work done. And sometimes that's put a lot of strain on many people. And we need to be particularly sensitive to wellness, both physical and mental wellness of people around the world. On the one hand, it provides a great deal of flexibility as well, but we have to respect the fact that people now have to, you know, have their personal lives working intertwined with their business lives. Now, from a company's perspective, as we come out of this, it allows us the flexibility to work in a much more distributed manner than we have been. It allows us to get talent wherever they're available, as opposed to forcing talent to relocate to where the company is. We go to where the talent is, as opposed to the talent coming to where we are. And that's a great flexibility that it affords us. This allows us to build a more diverse workforce because, you know, we can go get more diverse talent by looking at, you know, being much freer in terms of where the talent is located. And of course, it also forces us to be good at certain things, that we need to be good at engaging with people who are in a distributed way. And that's changing a lot of the norms, and we've started getting better at how we do that. We need to make sure that everybody has tools to make themselves productive and interact and engage with people and continue to build social capital. So this pandemic has created a massive, massive transformation in terms of how we think about work and life. And it's here to stay.
So true. Everything is about hybrid. You know, we are living in a world of hybrid cloud and hybrid computing and hybrid lives. Just to end this podcast, Rajiv, I'm grateful for everything. You know, thank you for the faith, your humility, your hunger, and just your passion for the next 3, 5, 7 years of this company. You know, there's this month, as I said, exactly 11 years since we raised our first money in a convertible note round back in 2009, December. And so much has transpired since then. You know, I look forward to you really making this company into an authentic consumption economy company.
And thank you, Dheeraj. You've done wonders here, and a lot of kudos to you I look forward to the journey ahead, working with the entire Nutanix team and our customers and partners to really build the next phase of Nutanix. Thank you.
The Tech Barometer podcast comes to you from The Forecast. We cover a variety of tech, cloud, and enterprise computing stories. Check it out at The Forecast by Nutanix.com.